Compared to the straight-laced Republican fiscal policy of the 1920s, the 1980s were a Roman orgy. By 1992, with the federal budget deficit reapproaching 5% of GDP and the infamous savings and loan bailout making daily headlines, citizen outrage energized the most successful independent presidential candidacy in 80 years, mounted by peppery Texas billionaire H. Ross Perot. Preaching against the dangers of debt and deficits, Perot urged a string of reforms that pivoted on an anti-deficit constitutional amendment and a long-term trade strategy focused on debt and jobs. The international economic supremacy of the United States circa 1960 was becoming a memory. By the late 1980s and early 1990s, Japan took over as the presumed threat. Smiling Tokyo billionaires were buying up trophy skyscrapers in Manhattan, along with what appeared to be half of Hawaii. Historian Paul Kennedy's 1987 book, The Rise and Fall of the Great Powers, crystallized attention to the idea that the United States might be on the cusp of great power decline. In 1988, Republican presidential hopeful Robert Dole had amended Ronald Reagan's 1984 claim that it was morning again in America. Now, said Dole, it was high noon. Time for the nation to face up to its global predicament, a point Perot and many others were to reiterate in 1992. Deficit foes, for their part, challenged debt apologists through a series of influential books: Beyond Our Means, 1987, by Alfred Malabre; On Borrowed Time, 1988, by investment banker and former Commerce Secretary Peter G. Peterson; Day of Reckoning, 1989, by Harvard economist Benjamin M. Friedman; and The Indebted Society, 1996, by economists James Medoff and Andrew Harless. Like Perot's, their indictments were unmistakable. Debt jeopardized the U.S. future. Yet the certainty about debt excesses was short-lived. Between 1998 and 2000, glum fiscal predictions appeared to wither on the vine as the technology-led stock market boom swelled toward its ultimate bubblehood. For a while, its luminance convinced many Americans, particularly investors, that prosperity and solvency had returned. Cassandras were awed into silence. Moreover, the stock market developed enough momentum that surging federal capital gains tax receipts washed away federal deficits. Unexpected federal budget surpluses replaced them in 1998, 1999, and 2000. Still buoyed by this, a heady George W. Bush, weeks after taking office in 2001, delivered State of the Union and budget messages proposing to both pay down an unprecedented part of our national debt and double our Medicare budget over the next decade. The principal caution was international. The rapidly expanding U.S. current account deficit, which combines the trade and investment flows. Briefly, a small surplus in 1991 as allies from Saudi Arabia to Japan reimbursed Washington for its outlays in the Gulf War, this deficit resurged during the late 1990s. To be sure, the simultaneous stock market boom facilitated soothing explanations. Powerfully, Americans were loading up on goods made elsewhere. But yes, foreigners were investing those dollars right back in soaring U.S. stocks. As for rising public consumption and its flip side, non-existent personal savings, that duality also had excuses. Did people need to save in banks when the values of their assets, stocks and real estate, were climbing like rockets? Wise or not, these were staple explanations. By the end of 2001, the world had changed again. The 1-2 punch of a stock market crash and a recession, followed by the trauma of September 11th, cut short any economic reveries. Slowly, painfully, awareness refocused on the nation's unresolved debt problems. By the 2004 presidential election, circumstances were worse than those 10 years earlier, aggravated by crises, financial developments, and White House missteps. Few people complained about outlays imposed by anti-terrorist demands and the war in Afghanistan, or about the Federal Reserve Board's 13 successive interest rate reductions that drove borrowing costs to a 45-year low by the summer of 2003. More skepticism, however, attached to the deficit-swelling tax cuts that principally benefited the richest Americans, the ongoing hemorrhage of manufacturing jobs, the higher-than-expected cost in lives and dollars of the 2003 invasion and occupation of Iraq, the related disruptions and soaring prices in the oil markets, and the accelerating 2002 to 2004 decline in the value of the dollar. The economic clouds were thickening again.